our new and regular listeners from around the world. My name is Henrik Palmgren, and I hope that you are comfortable wherever you are and ready for another radio program. And today we are going to talk about the importance of the heart and heart-based living. You probably have come across some of the work that the people over at the Heart Math Institute are doing. We've mentioned them during other programs here as well. And if you're not familiar with them, we are going to introduce you to some of their work and research for you here today. And joining us to do this, we have Howard Martin with us, the Executive Vice President of HeartMath. He has a background in business and personal development. His responsibilities include global alliances, marketing and program and product development. Howard has been instrumental in assisting Doc Childry, the founder of HeartMath Institute, the development and teaching of HeartMath's program since its inception. He speaks internationally on the HeartMath approach to advancing human performance that is based on compelling science research linking heart function with health, emotional well-being, and also intelligence. I can mention as well that Howard is co-author with Doc Childry of The HeartMath Solution, published in 2000, and also has developed a tape series called The HeartMath Method. Their main website is heartmath.org. That's the place you can go to find out more about their work and research. So with that, hi, Howard, and thank you for joining us here at Red Ice Radio today.
Well, Henrik, it's a pleasure to be with you today. Thanks for having me on your show and for giving me an opportunity to speak to all of your listeners around the world.
Thank you very much. I would like to begin to talk a little bit about the basics, of some of the work that you guys do over at the HeartMath Institute, and a little bit later in the program we are going to talk more about something called the Global Coherence Initiative, which is very interesting. But if you will, Howard, tell us a bit about the background and some of the work that you're doing.
Well, here at HeartMath, and we're based in Northern California, it was founded by Doc Childry, who you mentioned in my introduction. And we've been now doing this for 19 years, so a fairly long time that we've been in operation. And our goal was really to develop a simple system of tools and techniques and very interesting advanced new concepts, all supported by scientific research that could help people navigate these changing times. Doc, a long time ago, anticipated the accelerated change that we would be experiencing around the turn of the century. And I think all of us would agree that the speed of change is, in fact, accelerating, and that we live now in an extraordinary time period of great opportunity but also great challenge. And so HeartMath today is three organizations. It's the Institute of HeartMath, responsible for the scientific research as well as the education market. We have HeartMath LLC, which is the largest of our organizations, and we are responsible for all of the delivery of the training programs, the distribution of the products, and that sort of thing. And then Quantum InTech, which is our technology company. And all of that has grown from Doc's, you know, really desire to help people, his care and his understanding of people and what they'd be going through. So we have training programs, we have coaching programs, we have the M-Wave technology, a lot of things that we do. We operate all over the world. We have licensed operations. We have them in Scandinavia, where you are actually, with HeartMath Scandinavia. Mm-hmm. We have them in other foreign countries. We sell our products in over 75 countries. And it's been an amazing journey of helping people really get in touch with something that we all have, which is the core power and intelligence of our hearts.
So tell us a bit about heart-based living and what you mean with that.
Well, heart-based living, you hear a lot of people talking about the heart now more than ever and talking about it in different ways. Heart-based living is really the process of using what we call the intelligence of the heart to help us make the decisions that we need to make in life, big and small, to give us the ability to have a greater intuitive sense of what we're doing, a sensitivity to ourselves, a sensitivity to others and to our environment. Also, a greater ability to utilize this wonderful thing we have called emotion in ways that serve us rather than challenge us. Heart-based living leads to improved health, greater well-being, increased performance, a lot of things. But it all goes back to a simple premise that's been around for thousands of years, which is really listening to and following the direction of the heart. And I know that sounds somewhat philosophical, and it is. But with us, we have seen the heart as more than just a philosophical concept. It's certainly something that's not just soft and sweet. We see it as a very powerful intelligence, an intelligence that all of us have, that we were born with, an intelligence that that does give us that guidance. It's our own best friend, really, and our most reliable guide for making the decisions we need to make. It's an intelligence that we often lose as we go through the roar of ambition and survival. We begin to live from the neck up, and we lose connection to this core power. When we return to it, which is not as hard as it may sound, something magnificent begins to happen, and we begin to approach life in a new way. And that is really the essence of heart-based living. We see ourselves, we see others, we see the world in a new way when we're operating from the heart.
Do you think that the importance of the heart, as you alluded to, have been kind of neglected in our common sphere of knowledge around the world, or are there still some parts of the world, according to you, that holds this tradition, so to speak?
Well, it's been neglected somewhat, but it's stuck around as well. If you think about it, you know, well, the earliest writings I've seen about the heart being more than a blood pump go back 4,500 years ago in ancient Chinese writings. And the view of heart as something more than a pump, as a source of intelligence, was really the predominant way heart was looked at through many thousands of years. It was in the late 1500s that an English physician, Dr. William Harvey, did us all a great service. He came along and he published the first research showing that the physical heart was a four-chambered organ pumping blood through the body. And as his work became popular, people that reported on it said things like, when Harvey's work was popularized, that heart lost its thought and thought lost its heart. And what that means is that through the process of medical reductionism, people began to see the heart as only a pump and began to assign all intelligence to the brain. But even with that going on, we all have an intuitive sense that there's more going on with the heart. And all the great poets and philosophers and musicians and many people, great thinkers, have often referred to the heart in ways that imply that it is certainly more than a pump. Now, we looked at this, and long before we founded HeartMath, we were people that were interested in improving our own lives. How can we be better people? How can we serve others? We had strong motivation to improve ourselves and to be of service. So we looked at all various systems and schools of thought to determine, you know, what information would be valuable to us. And one of the things that we noticed was that the heart was being referred to in many of the great systems, the great philosophies, the great religions, all those things were referring to heart as something more. So we began to explore the heart ourselves. And what we found was that at an energetic level, not just a physical level, but an energetic level, emotional level, spiritual connection level, and even physical level, the heart is certainly more than just a pump. And that's what led us to begin to do the scientific research to look at the physical heart, for starters, and map out and see if there was a communication pathway that was taking place between the heart and the brain and the body. And we found research that was out there in the world that nobody had sort of paid attention to. We did our own research. We brought together researchers from around the world, and we definitively have shown now that even at the physical level, the heart is an amazing part of our physiology that's doing more than pumping blood. And that research is probably what we're most famous for, Heinrich, is that we showed that the heart, in fact, does communicate to the brain and the rest of the body.
Tell us a little bit about about the relationship between the heart and the brain then, because what I've heard is that the heart actually carries a higher, I think it is microvolt than the brain does. Is that true?
Well, that's one way of looking at it. I mean, the heart is an electrical organ. It produces by far the strongest source of bioelectricity in our bodies, up to 40 to 60 times stronger than the second most powerful source, which in fact is the brain. The heart sends these powerful healing commands throughout the body. It does it in four ways, and I'd be glad to briefly describe those if you'd like me to for your listeners.
Yeah, please do.
Well, it has a nervous system, for starters, a very complex nervous system studied through the field of what's called neurocardiology. This nervous system sends information from the heart to the brain, and that information travels all the way through the brain and terminates up in our higher perceptual centers in the brain, what's called the neocortex. The brain does send information down to the heart, which controls the timing of the heartbeat. But when researchers map out the neurological traffic in our bodies, it's clearly seen that the heart is sending a lot more information to the brain than it's receiving from the brain. And that's just one way. Mm-hmm. The second way is biophysical. if listeners now just place their finger on their wrist, they'll feel their pulse. The pulse is actually a wave of energy created by the heart. It pushes the blood through the veins and arteries. It's called a blood pressure wave. And this blood pressure wave, again, travels throughout the entire system and influences various organs in the body. One of the organs that it influences is the brain. Changes in the blood pressure wave modulate or affect electrical activity in our physical brain. And that's the second way. The third way is hormonally or biochemically. In 1983, the heart was actually reclassified as part of our hormonal system. And it produces several hormones. One's called atrial peptide. It's a very powerful hormone that's responsible for the reduction of a stress hormone called cortisol. It also produces oxytocin, which is generically called the love hormone. And these first three ways, Heinrich, are like hardwired biological communication pathways. And it shows, for starters, that the heart is sending a lot more information to the brain and the rest of the body. The blood pressure waves are affecting the brain and the body. Hormonally, it's affecting things. All of this is happening from the heart. And that's just biological communication. The fourth way is where it gets really interesting to me. You asked about it earlier, about the heart producing, you know, microvolts of electricity. Mm-hmm. And it's an electrical organ. It produces an electromagnetic field that surrounds our body in 360 degrees all around the entire body. And that electromagnetic field is strong enough that not only does it radiate to every single cell in our body, but it radiates beyond the skin out into space. And researchers, they've measured this electromagnetic field. In my book, The Heart Math Solution, researchers at the Menninger Clinic said they'd measured it 8 to 10 feet away. Our researchers using magnetometers say that they've measured it 3 to 4 feet out. But regardless, we're generating a field that extends beyond our skin into space. And this is not an aura or subtle energy. This isn't even into quantum physics at this point. This is very measurable electromagnetic energy, kind of like radio waves. Now, taking a step further, the components of that electromagnetic field, the frequency, so to speak, will change depending upon our emotional state. When we are feeling strong negative emotions like anger or frustration, you see a very incoherent frequency pattern in the field. When we are experiencing emotions that have long been metaphorically associated with the word heart, like care, compassion, love, appreciation, those kind of feelings, it produces a different electromagnetic signature in the field, a more coherent signature. So in a sense, where it gets interesting is we are literally broadcasting our emotions to ourselves and then out into space through this electromagnetic field produced by the heart. Hmm. Now the question becomes, how does my field affect the field of the brain? How does my field affect or is affected by the fields of other people? How does nature interact with the fields produced by the heart? And then ultimately, how does the collective heart field environment created by humanity interact with the fields produced by planet Earth itself? Hmm. And this is where it gets interesting to me, Now we move beyond hardwired biology into something that's got huge implication and goes beyond even the electromagnetic information, but into things like quantum physics, like how far does this field really go? Does it go beyond the fields bound by time and space? This is where it gets exciting and interesting, and it all comes back again to the heart.
So how much research have you been able to do in regards to what you mentioned here in terms of the effect potentially then on the quantum field, if we can call it that, by the heart?
Well, we're beginning that research now, and other researchers as well are interested in this. And so we have a great group of scientists that are working on these things. I think the main way we're doing it now is through the Global Coherence Initiative, which is a part of the Institute of Heart Math, which is a science-based initiative designed really to unite many thousands of people all around the world to learn how to improve their own, what we call, heart coherence. And I know I'm changing concepts a lot here, so listeners, please bear with me. But improve the level of heart-brain interaction within the individuals. Then join that power collectively within the membership of the Global Coherence Initiative, and then begin to do experiments looking at changes that may be occurring in the Earth's fields. Because, see, the Earth produces fields itself, a geomagnetic field and a field called the ionosphere. And so ultimately, we're looking at changes in mass human emotion and how they may be detectable in the Earth's geomagnetic and ionospheric fields. And so this is a beginning stage of showing that really mass human emotion may be having a measurable impact on the Earth itself. And we can talk more about that as the show goes on, but that's a little introduction into how we're beginning to look at the power of emotion, the power of the heart, in its interaction with the Earth itself.
That is very interesting. I think I want to ask you a little bit later more about potential then effects of this, so to speak. But if we talk a little bit more primarily about the heart and so forth here and what you mentioned, do you think that this could be connected with the Kirlian photography, for instance, in terms of measuring the aura? That we have different visual representations of this. Do you think we're talking about the same thing here, or is this something different in terms of the heart?
Well, I think, you know, I don't know a tremendous amount about Kirlian photography, but I think that there's new science coming in. I think Kirlian photography would be a step towards the kind of science that we're going to see in the future. We're going to see new science emerge over time that's going to prove out things that we've been wondering about for a really long time and have had belief in for a very long time. In our case, looking at the power of heart focus, care, and intention is a way of maybe looking at and proving scientifically that things like our prayers do count, the meditations that people do, well, they do have an effect. Intuitively, we know this already, and maybe we don't need science to prove it. But when we have science to prove something, it makes it more real. It makes it more tangible. And when it becomes more real, its power increases. The power of belief increases when we have proof that belief makes a difference. So Kirlian photography, other sciences that are out there, many great things going on, many progressive things going on in the world of science to begin to prove out some of these things that we've believed for thousands of years.
Very interesting. Do you think that intuition and other kind of more elusive subjects, so to speak, could be connected with this as well, the heart?
Yes, definitely. Now, there's one study that we've done. It was a study published in the Journal of Alternative and Complementary Medicine, and it was a study looking at what we thought at the time was the precognitive response. Basically, we had test subjects sitting in front of a computer, and the computer was loaded with images, some of which were pleasant, some were very horrific. And the computer was randomly selecting those images. A person sitting in front of the computer would press a button. There'd be a delay, an indeterminate amount of time and delay, and a picture would emerge. And we had the test subjects wired up from head to toe. We were looking at brainwave activity. We were looking at changes in the heart. We were looking at changes in skin temperature. A variety of things were being measured simultaneously. When the researchers analyzed the data, they were shocked to see some things that they hadn't expected. They saw that in many cases, up to 6 seconds prior to the time the picture actually came on the screen, that the body responded as if the picture was already there. It was the physiological response to the upcoming picture actually began to occur 6 seconds before it actually showed up on the screen. When they analyzed the data more thoroughly and really dug in. This was a very complicated and expensive scientific experiment. When they analyzed the data further, they found out that the first part of our physiology to respond before the picture was actually there was the heart, about 6 seconds out. About a second and a half later, the brain began to respond, and then a second and a half before the picture actually emerged on the screen, the heart and the brain synchronized. But it was the heart that was the first responder. Now, that's amazing to me. So it found out that it really wasn't precognitive because it was not the brain that was responding first. It was the heart. And so what I draw from that, and it's something that I've believed in myself for a long time, is that the heart is really the entry point in our system where spirit, and I'll use spirit as a generic term for something larger than our normal selves, but it's through the heart where spirit actually merges with our day-to-day lives, with our physical consciousness. And it comes in through the heart level. Now, I've experienced this many, many times, and I've believed it for a long time. The experiment that I just mentioned is a step towards showing that that may in fact be the case, that the intuitive response happens through the heart, not just through the brain. Heart and brain work together. They're a powerful combination, but brain function actually is critically dependent upon signals from the heart. So it requires both heart and brain for us to really experience something like intuition. And I believe that the heart plays a key role in all of this.
Maybe you can talk a little bit about, I guess, emotional well-being and also emotional stability and how you think that this is connected to the heart.
Well, I'm glad you asked about that, because this is a practical reason for heart math and for heart-based living and for even doing the scientific research. You see, we have this great gift. It's the ability to feel. We can feel a myriad of emotions. We can feel more emotional textures than any other living thing on this planet. And that's a great, great gift. It turns life from being just a dry, objective experience into a living, visceral, tangible, beautiful experience. But yet emotion is something we haven't learned how to utilize properly. It still is the enemy. People still fear emotion. Emotional responses to all the different things that happen in life take us up and down and all around, from joy one minute to sadness the next, and a lot of different things in between. And it's really through a lack of being able to regulate emotions that we experience some of the things in life that we really don't want to experience. And in these changing times, there's so much coming at us, so many new things, so many new challenges, so much information. It's bombarding us, and our emotional maturity can't keep up with it. We haven't developed the ability yet to utilize our emotions in a way that allow us to ride these waves of change gracefully. Instead, they're beating people around. People are not doing well overall with the speed of change. And you see that so easily when you look across society at all the problems that people are having. So I say that with great compassion. It is through developing the intelligence of the heart that we gain a greater ability to better regulate our emotions. And that does not mean repress emotion. It means to make better emotional choices, to learn how to have emotional reactions, but then to make choices that bring us back to where we want to be more quickly. It allows us to experience emotions I mentioned earlier, like care and compassion and love and appreciation, more easily. And when we are able to do that, and we're able to take the emotional energy that we have and direct it in ways that are positive and productive, that's when we begin to experience a more fulfilling life. It affects everything from our health to our relationships to our performance. And so the most practical approach to application of heart intelligence is learning to use it to better regulate our emotions. That's how we grow spiritually and in many other ways, I think, right now especially, is by learning how to better use our emotional gift.
One question that comes up in connection with this, and you alluded to this a little bit as well, is basically if you think that people are escaping from their emotions at this time, and because we can see this in terms of how medication is being applied and the different, if you will, hormonal balancing things that people take in order to maybe not only suppress but also keep it in more balanced. And the question then that comes up there is how can emotions then be a choice? Because this is something that for most people just happen, if you know what I mean, Howard.
Well, it's an interesting comment, Heinrich, because that same statement was made to me a number of years ago when I was being interviewed for ABC World News Tonight. After the interview, the interviewer came up to me and said, "That was an amazing statement you just made. I never thought of emotion as a choice. I always thought they were something that happened to me." Mm. Now, in the new days, in the new times that we're moving into, the new consciousness, we begin to see that differently. Yes, we will have emotional reactions. Very often, emotion does happen to us from the perceptions of life that we have. But we also have a much greater ability to choose the emotions that we want. And I think one of the higher forms of consciousness is to be able to feel the emotions we want to feel when we want to feel them. And we have this capacity as human beings. It's more readily available now than ever before. It doesn't mean that we won't feel sad sometimes, or that we won't feel angry, or that we won't feel disappointed. But we can learn how to then make choices when we're feeling, say, disappointed, and shift those emotions in a way that puts us back in a place that's more productive. It's kind of like diet. We choose what food we want to eat, and we put more emphasis on that than ever before. Many people do, because we know what certain foods do or don't do to our bodies. But we have this emotional diet, which means the emotions that we have running through our system all the time that we just take for granted is that they're there. We can't do anything about them. They're only reactions. In the new consciousness, we don't see it that way. We say, wait a minute, I can stop certain emotions. I can engage in certain emotions. I can begin to paint the picture of life consciously with the emotions that I want to choose and not just be a victim of emotion. This is all part of the newness that's coming in now with the shift. That's part of the evolution of the human species, is a greater ability to utilize our emotions. And that's the difference. It's a big difference in many ways, but it's not as hard as it sounds.
Do you think that people can utilize the precognitive properties that you mentioned before, meaning that we can, if you will, embrace ourselves when we're confronted with something uncomfortable?
Yeah, we certainly can. I think that one of the ways to use it is to prepare for things. We call it simply PREP, P-R-E-P, for those international people around the world, PREP. Prepping is really powerful. It sounds very simple, but when you begin to apply it, it becomes a really powerful tool. And that means this. You mentioned earlier that we are producing, I mentioned and you asked me about it, the energetic field produced by the heart. So we're constantly producing an energetic field, an energetic field environment. And that field environment does change depending upon what we are feeling emotionally. And we do this 24 hours a day for our entire lives. So if we learn that we are creating our own field environment and we are going to be in, let's say, a meeting that we could be challenging, or we have to have a conversation with someone that we know could be difficult, what if we prepare for that by really going in our heart first, finding some compassion for the people we're going to be communicating with, some extra care, some appreciation for ourselves, and we prepare our own field environment before we engage within that context of that meeting or that conversation. What that does is it sets up a different opportunity for something good to occur. It doesn't mean it always will. Things could go the opposite direction. But we are preparing ourselves so that we are maintaining our own internal balance, conserving our energy, and doing what we can to create a field environment that will produce a good outcome. And prepping also gets into things. I mean, for me personally, I know my own mechanical reactions. I know certain things that will, use an American term, push my buttons.
Yeah.
I know these things. They're not a mystery to me. If I know I'm going into a meeting that could be challenging, I can consciously prep to say to myself, I am going to be in a place now where I'm not going to react the same old way. I've done this 1,000 times. It doesn't work. I'm not going to do it this time. I'm going to use the power of my heart to arrest those things before they get me. I'm going to put out more care and appreciation in the face of whatever comes my way. That is using the core power of the heart, the intelligence of the heart, to regulate emotions and create a field environment that produces a higher chance for a positive outcome.
You mentioned a new consciousness before. What does that mean? Where is this coming from, Howard?
Well, it's coming from generically what would be called the universal source, the energetic forces that have been guiding this planet, for billions of years. And it's all part of a natural evolutionary process. The way I look at it is it's a dimensional shift. And dimension in this context does not mean a physical location. It's a range of consciousness. We've been operating now primarily in third dimensional consciousness for 2,000 or 3,000 years. And that consciousness is not bad. It's produced a lot of great results. But it is a duality. It's a good, bad, right, and wrong. It's survival mentality. It's look out for yourself. It's a lot of things. Now we're moving into the fourth dimensional consciousness. And it's not just into the fourth. It's into the higher range of the fourth. So we're really in the process right now of making a dimensional shift of 1.5 dimensions. And it's happening very, very quickly. And people all around the world where I speak, and I speak in Europe and United States and Asia, they generically call it the shift. Everybody's experiencing the shift in one way or another now. It's this major shift in consciousness. And it's causing a lot of stress because the old is moving out while the new is trying to come in. And a lot of times anytime you see that much change, it's always stressful. And so this dimensional shift is bringing in a new consciousness that's going to give us new capacities as human beings. It's going to give us, for example, a greater ability to make emotional choices. It's also going to lead, ultimately, to greater harmony, cooperation, more peace in the world, the intelligence we need to solve problems like global warming and things that we know are going to be issues in the future. It's a new intelligence we absolutely have to have in order to survive as a species on planet Earth. The good news is it's coming in now, and it's accessible to people, but it's also a challenging time for people.
So what do you think some of the, if you will, signatures of this will be? Will everybody move into this, willing or not, or will some, upgrade, if we can use that word then, and some not? What do you think about that, Howard?
It's going to be down to people's choices, and you're right about that. We are a planet of choice, and some people will choose to move on into the next, and some won't. Some people will try to hang on to the old while the new's coming in, and it just is not going to work. The characteristics of it can be many things. One of the things that I'm already seeing take place now is that, ambition, just raw, aggressive ambition, does not seem to be producing the same positive results that it has produced in the past. It seems to be creating, in many cases, an opposite result. It's not working like it used to. Cooperation and coming together is working a lot more than individual ambition. I'm already seeing the signs of that everywhere that I go. That's just one example. Another example might be that for thousands of years, the people that have sort of approached life from a more caring place, a more, open-hearted place, often seem to come out, they don't seem to be respected. They're looked at as weak. That's changing. Now people that have this type of character and this principle and this integrity about them are beginning to be recognized more for that. And there are many things that are going to happen. I get asked in media interviews to describe, well, what is this new dimension going to be like? And my answer to that is, to be honest, I don't know. And the reason I don't know is because it's completely new. And our tendency when we talk about new is we try to see new from where we are today. In other words, we try to put new clothes on what we already see. And what we're moving into now is something we haven't ever seen before. It would be like someone coming up to a person, let's say in the 1800s, who's sitting on a horse and buggy and saying to them, there's going to be new transportation in the future. And if the person on the horse and buggy was trying to figure that out, they probably would be seeing a better horse and a better buggy. But they wouldn't be seeing the airline industry, because they couldn't. And that's the exciting position we're in today. It's going to be so different and so new that we really can't see it yet. So my approach is take it day to day, moment to moment, put out more love, put out more care, do what I can to continue to improve myself and stay in alignment with my higher principle, and then help others. And let the rest of it unfold. I don't spend a lot of time worrying about or trying to figure out the future. I try to just stay in the flow with what's going on in my moment to moment, day to day, because it is big. And your question is like, is it going to shift? Are people all going to shift? Well, not necessarily, but the shift is happening anyway. It's not just about us. It's about the entire planet. It's about the solar system. It's about things that are even larger than our solar system. It's a universal shift that's occurring. We're just a part of it. And so people will either move along or they won't, but we're just one part of something that's much, much larger than we are.
Could this be also creating some havoc, if we put it that way, then? If we connect this with the Global Coherence Initiative, some of the research that you've done in terms of the magnetic field of the Earth, and basically, do you think that the effects here, this rather will affect our our collective emotions, will affect Earth in different ways? Can we talk about weather patterns? Can we talk about other things? We're in the realm of Wilhelm Reich almost here now. But any comments on that, Howard?
Absolutely. I think, it will affect it all. And you can see that it is challenging already. We look at a range of challenges. They're the individual challenges, the things that people are feeling on the inside of themselves, the insecurity and the anxiety and, in many cases, depression. And you alluded to it earlier. Many people are struggling, and they need to take medication and things just to cope. And that's at the personal level. Then you have the societal level. You can see many of the social systems, the very things that we've relied upon for security for a long time, are beginning to crumble. Things like the financial system and the financial crisis that we're in right now and have been through for the last year or so. In the United States, the healthcare system. Around the world, things like the governmental systems, the legal systems. We have wars, we have terrorism, we have all this happening where we have this huge divide between people who have a life where they have food, clothing, shelter, and transportation, and billions that don't. All this is coming to light more strongly now. Then we have the challenges with the earth itself, the weather pattern changes, the geological changes, volcanoes, earthquakes, all these various things. And all of these things are being exacerbated by this dimensional shift change. Now, I know I've just laid out a terrible scenario. Let me please offer you and the listeners another viewpoint. These things are being impacted by the choices that we are making. They're larger than what we are doing, but we are influencing these things. It's the choices we are making collectively as a global species, so to speak, that have an impact on the Earth itself. The good news is that millions and millions and millions of people around the world are making good choices. They are moving into the new intelligence. They are changing the way they believe. They're changing their lifestyles. They're changing how they treat one another. And new intelligence is emerging in people. And I see this everywhere I go. I certainly see it in Europe. I certainly see it in Scandinavia. I certainly see it in Sweden when I'm in Sweden. This amazing new intelligence is emerging. So I'm a very hopeful person. I'm a pragmatist saying, yes, we're going to face more challenges as we move along in the next coming years, and that's going to be tough. But we're also manifesting a whole new social consciousness that is going to put us in a position where we're going to have this new world that's going to be a much better world than the one we live in today. And it will happen, you know, in the not-too-distant future. So I'm a pragmatist and a hopeful person all at the same time.
Mm. So what do you think people's, if you will, responsibilities in all of this? Do you think that a big part of this is that we need to become more aware of ourselves, of our surrounding and so forth? And from that point of view, what I'm seeing right now, I'm a little bit more skeptical in that sense. I see that there's a lot of problems out there in one way. I reckon as well that this has to do with the fact that what you choose to focus on as well, obviously, and decide to highlight, absolutely. But in terms of people's responsibilities here, if you will, any comments on that, Howard?
Yeah, Henrik, and I'm glad you asked the question. It's actually a very mature question on your part. Yeah, we all have a responsibility. What's interesting about this time period and this dimensional shift is that it comes down to our individual self-empowerment or not. It's an individual process. The choices that we're making, whether we are choosing to operate from the unmanaged mind through the roar of ambition and survival, or whether we're really operating more from the true core heart intelligence that we have, is the choice. Are we complaining and griping and fighting and angry all the time, or are we more caring and compassionate? Simple choices like that, moment to moment, day to day, are our responsibility. And it is an individual game. It's becoming more and more that. I think, you know, a lot of people talk about the shift. They talk about 2012, and they see it through the viewpoint that there's going to be these big external events that create the change. And there may be external events, but the real change is going to occur as each one of us begins to make a shift in ourselves, to operate more from our higher principle and our higher dignity as best we can, allowing for our humanness, allowing for the challenges, but making an effort to do the right thing moment to moment, day to day, whatever that right thing is. And that is our responsibility, and it's also the greatest service we can do to the world today. The things that we do, the projects we're involved in, the business stuff that I do, all those things are important and they count. But the real, true, most important contribution we make are those individual choices we make from the inside out. And that is our responsibility. And it's an era of self-responsibility that we live in today. And that's why I liked your question a lot, because it gets right down to the essence of it all. It's just an individual choice about what we do or don't do. And those choices are what's dictating the speed of change.
You know, Howard, we're on this program also kind of, if you will, conspiratorial oriented on this show. We
sure
focus on the fact that there is a power elite as well. And from my point of view, when you mention all these things, the question and the thing that arises here is I don't think that they will let go of that easy of their control of their system that they have in place. How do you see this in terms of the change that you're talking about? Do you see that there's a strife going on, or do you see that these people in charge and so forth simply will change from within and follow along with this, or any comments on that?
Well, I don't really know. I mean, I found the conspiracy stuff interesting, certainly entertaining to me when I hear about some of these things. You're right, you know, as people that are in power don't usually give up their power very easily. And a lot of that's what's going on right now. It's you know, you see the fight already taking place. And so what's going to happen in the future, I'm not sure. But I think that ultimately the momentum of it all will be so strong that, you know, things will change anyway. Certain things will just have to change, where it goes beyond just what people want and don't want. It'll get bigger than all of that. And I think that the systems will change over time. I also think that as the people began to express themselves in new ways, it creates an effect and a change. I mean, you look at it now. We, the people themselves, have a great ability to communicate. You have this radio show. It's internet-based. It goes all over the world. There's no limitation to this, for example. And there's a lot of things like that where we have a voice today. And those voices will get louder and louder, and as they do, it will force change. People in power won't let it go easily. They'll fight. They'll manipulate. They'll do everything they can. But ultimately, the rising tides of the people, I think, will win out. And I think it will produce some massive change. But, you know, again, when you look across the landscape of life today, it's easy to see that it looks like, how are we going to solve these problems? And I admit, I can feel the same feelings. And it looks daunting sometimes, like, how in the world is this ever going to shift?
Yeah.
You know, I just see so much of that, and it can bring me down sometimes. I just don't see sometimes how it can possibly work out. But then I find this place in my heart where I access something larger than self, and I access my own core power and my own intuition, and I begin to see it differently. I see it more hopefully, more open-ended, and more possibilities begin to emerge from me. But I can feel both just like anybody can, and that's I say that with compassion because I go through the same thing.
I do believe that you're right on that note, Howard. I want to ask you a little bit more about technology. You mentioned the internet before here. What is the HeartMath Institute kind of relationship with the technological development in all of this as well, with technology aid in this process? I mean, you guys, for instance, have a lot of technology-based products out there and so forth in order to aid along with this.
Yeah, we do. Well, we have, like, you know, once we understood the heart-brain communication that I talked about earlier in the show, we wanted to know, how could you improve it? And we began to study a field called heart rhythm analysis. Its medical term is heart rate variability. And that gives you a measurement of the quality of communication between the heart and the brain. And then we discovered you could improve that. And so we began to develop technology that can measure changes in the heart-brain communication. And then use those measurements to train us how to improve the communication between heart and brain. And so the state that we were improving is really something I referred to just briefly earlier called coherence, a highly ordered, highly synchronized state. So we developed the M-Wave technology. That's E-M-W-A-V-E. It comes in computer-based versions as well as handheld versions. Now, the M-Wave measures the subtle changes in our heart rhythms. And it scores those changes to determine how coherent they are. Low coherence is normal. High coherence is optimal. And you can see this happening on the screen. You see the heart rhythm patterns on the screen. You see the coherence levels changing. And you use this technology to learn how to improve your heart-brain coherence. It's powerful technology. We sell the M-Waves, hundreds of thousands of them, really all around the world. They're available, you know, in many countries. We sell them in over 75 countries. I know a lot of your listeners are in Scandinavia, HeartMath Scandinavia, heartmath.se. You can see the M-Waves there on the HeartMath Scandinavia site, and you can learn more about them. It's a little difficult to describe, but it's simple technology, handheld and computer-based. People from all walks of life use it. It's used by Olympic athletes, professional golfers, business people. Lots of health professionals, medical professionals use the M-Wave technology. Hundreds of thousands of people interested in their personal and spiritual growth use it. It's become quite popular. It's in a sense a form of biofeedback, but it's different than brain biofeedback. It's really heart biofeedback. And that's something we developed here at HeartMath. So that's to your point. We recognize that using technology in a positive way could be very powerful. We're very technology-oriented as a global society today. So we did develop technologies good for you. And one interesting note, I just remembered this, is like in 2008, last year, this year in January 2009, at the Consumer Electronics Show, which is a huge show held in Las Vegas every year, the M-Wave technology actually won an award called the Last Gadget Standing, which is an award that people vote on for the most innovative and useful new technology. So we beat out technology from the major companies, you know, things like cell phones and cameras and all those kind of technologies, and we won the Last Gadget Standing award. So it's very powerful technology and fun. It's fun to use and useful to use. It helps you learn how to regulate your emotions. It reduces stress. It gives you the ability to improve heart-brain coherence and a lot of things. So I recommend you go to the HeartMath sites, heartmath.com or .org, or if you're in a country like Scandinavia, go to heartmath.se. You can check out our global partners around the world. We have them in China, and we have them in Australia, and Netherlands, France, UK, a lot of places where we have representatives.
So this technology, in that sense, is aimed at helping you along to get more familiar. Because again, you alluded to kind of similarities with a biofeedback device before, that you can see the direct results, if you will, then on a screen. But eventually, this is something that you should be able to harness even without the technology. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. You can do it without the technology. It's kind of like the technology is a friendly facilitator. It's sort of like a GPS system in a sense. You know, I got around for most of my whole life without a GPS and found where I needed to be. But now that I have one in my car, it makes it a little easier.
There you go. So in terms of health as well, maybe you can talk about that and how the heart function and the improvement and awareness of the heart is connected with health, Howard.
Well, when we learn to regulate our emotions and when we learn to improve this heart-brain communication, a whole host of health benefits can occur. First of all, we definitely become more revitalized. That's not a direct health benefit, but it's an effect of good health. We've seen a lot of changes in things like lowering of blood pressure. We can't make that medical claim, but we certainly have seen it through case histories and through what's been reported back to us by people. Changes in things like heart arrhythmia have occurred. We've done studies showing changes in things like diabetes. Again, blood pressure, we've done some studies in companies showing a lowering of blood pressure. It's not a clinical study, but it's a study showing the effects of HeartMath techniques and our technology on things like that. Emotional health definitely has improved. Lots of improvement in with people that suffer from things like anxiety and depression. That's been improved as well. So a host of health benefits can occur when we learn to operate more coherently internally, improve that heart-brain communication, learn to activate positive emotions more regularly. A lot of things happen in the body that are positive for us. And so, you know, you can look on the sites and see studies and see case histories and things on the websites as well about the health benefits of practicing HeartMath. So the technology is just one of the ways in which people do it. But the tools, techniques, things we offer in our training programs, you combine all that together into a complete system, and then you've got a way of really living your life more from the heart, which goes back to heart-based living, and health improvements are a byproduct of that.
So what's next for you guys in terms of research? If we talk about the Global Coherence Initiative, for instance, what do you think some of the outcome potentially might be of some of the research that you're doing?
Well, here's the hypothesis of this, is that mass human emotion, whether positive or negative, can have a measurable impact on the Earth itself. So to look at this hypothesis, we have developed technology that measures subtle changes in the Earth's energetic fields. The Earth produces a geomagnetic field, which is what a compass measures. It also produces a field that's connected or associated with the geomagnetic field called the ionosphere, which is less dense. It operates above the atmosphere. And these fields are constantly fluctuating and changing. Now, this technology we've developed, we have a working sensor site in Northern California that's measuring these changes as we speak. And our researchers are studying these fields and looking at these things. Our goal is to place 10 to 12 sensor sites around the world to have a complete land-based system that we can look at these changes in the fields. We'll correlate the data that we take in with data from things like the Random Number Generator Network that's created by Roger Nelson at Princeton, along with government satellite data, and begin to get a complete picture of these fields and the fluctuations and changes that occur in them. Now, that's the measurement side. The experiment side will be, let's take the Global Coherence Initiative members. And by the way, you can check all this out on a site. I'd like to give that URL if I could, if it'd be okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
It's GLCoherence, CoHERENCE.org. You can go there and become a member. Membership is free. You become a member of a community of people who are dedicated to using their own heart focus, care, and intention to actually affect consciousness in order to affect positive change. And coherence is neutral. It's not about adopting a HeartMath belief system. People do their own prayers, their own meditations, their own affirmations, their own intention exercises, whatever they want to do. We're just saying add the power of the heart to it. Increase the coherence that you're doing it with, and it has more impact. So we'll be doing experiments in the future with the Global Coherence Initiative community, where we will be looking at the effects of when we focus the community on a specific outcome, for example. Do we actually see a measurable effect in the ionosphere and or geomagnetic fields? Then taking a step further, do these changes in these fields actually create any kind of positive change in society? Now, we've got a long way to go to prove this out. This is not trivial science. It's being done rigorously and very academically from the ground up. So we're taking it step at a time. And right now, we're building the community. There are over 20,000 members in the Global Coherence Initiative right now. They represent over 79 countries around the world. And we do webinars. We provide information. We provide techniques. We provide guidance on our suggestions for where to send the heart focus, care, and intention. We're doing all of that now while we are building the sensor site technology and placing it around the world. We'll be placing more sensor sites in 2010. We have the working sensor site now in Northern California. Our researchers are working with that information all the time now. And really what we're looking for is to let's prove that we can create global coherence, something that's measurable that has a positive impact on society. So this is an area for me after 19 years, and I'm doing a lot of things here at HeartMath that really excites me. Because I believe for a long, long time that the change really occurs at the level of consciousness first, and then it filters itself down into sort of the psychological frameworks in which we draw reality from, and then those psychological frameworks determine how the world sort of functions, how do systems function, how do people function, how does all that happen? But it starts at the level of consciousness first. So working now at this level, bringing HeartMath's expertise in creating heart coherence and its scientific abilities into looking at consciousness research, this is exciting for me. It's something that I'm very passionate about and that I speak about around the world. I will be in Europe in 2010. I'll be in Amsterdam in April with Greg Braden, for example. We talk about this together. I think you probably know who Greg Braden is.
Yeah, we've had him on the program, yes.
Yeah, well, he and I are close friends. He's also a steering committee member of Global Coherence Initiative. About three or four times a year, we join forces where he and I speak together. And we talk about these things, and we'll be in Europe next year doing some of that as well. So it's something we're both very excited about. We're really glad that this project exists. It's helping people who are members to improve their own lives, and it's really bringing people together in a very meaningful and powerful way to affect consciousness. and then to measure it if we can. So we'll see if we can measure it. It's a hypothesis at this point, but we believe that it's possible, and that's what we're setting out to do. So glcoherence.org.
Okay, the main website is heartmath.org, where you can go to read more about the research and the work of the HeartMath Institute and the EM Wave or M Wave products. And again, heads up then on Howard and Greg's appearance in Amsterdam here next year. And also take a look at glcoherence.org for more on the Global Coherence Initiative. Thank you for joining us on the program, Howard Martin. We'll keep an eye on the developments. Very interesting research indeed, and keep up the great work.
Well, thank you very much, Heinrich. You keep up the great work. Thanks for having a show like you have, and I hope all of you listening around the world have gotten something of value out of this that you can apply to your own life. That's what's most important to me.
Okay, that's our program with Howard Martin. Thank you for listening and for following Red Ice. Enjoy the new year, 2010, the year we make contact, as Arthur C. Clarke wrote. Keep an eye on our website for regular updates and new material. Red Ice is expanding into new areas all the time. My thanks to Fredrik, Elizabeth, and Lana, and we will be back with more before you know it. Take care. Bye-bye.